From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the... I can do anything.
I made a decision as a parent just last weekend to remove my endorsement of the Republican nominee and also asked to be removed from the Agricultural Advisory Committee that I was named to that never met.
Paul Ryan, you know, open borders and amnesty and lots of other, and bad budgets, by the way, very, very bad budgets. I'm just tired of non-support, and I don't really want to support.
I've told publicly that Donald Trump to shut the hell up with regard to Speaker Ryan. I don't think attacking your fellow Republicans is a way to build bridges in Washington.
This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly I'm not proud of it, but this is locker room talk.
I am appalled. I'm disgusted by the statements that have come out recently in the presidential election.
You still won't say whether or not you support.
I have not endorsed. I have not endorsed, not supported, and I've said that, and that's my position.
You did say you would support the ticket. You said you would support the nominee and the ticket, so what happened to that?
I've made my statement.
Governor Bruce Rauner might want to be done talking about Donald Trump, but that doesn't mean we're going to stop asking about him. Before that, we heard an excerpt from the Republican Party presidential nominee's now infamous 2005 Access Hollywood video, first reported by the Washington Post, in which he describes getting away with unwanted touching and grabbing of women. We also heard from Senator Mark Kirk, a Republican who long ago abandoned Trump, and Congressman Rodney Davis, who did so just last weekend. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. Our panel this week includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and Jamie Dunn, editor of Illinois Issues and a contributor to NPR Illinois. Let's dig right in to the fallout in Illinois. It was pretty swift in terms of Congressman Rodney Davis last weekend deciding to withdraw his endorsement of Donald Trump. He was one of many congressional Republicans who did that. Jamie and Amanda, you both were on a panel at a debate involving Congressman Davis and his Democratic opponent this week. Can you talk a little bit about how he says he came to that decision?
Well, you know, and that was one of the questions that we felt that we needed to ask right out front there, because you had, first of all, Congressman Davis. If you take a look at his Facebook page, he took a lot of heat from followers, from people who said that they had supported him and feel like he is a, quote, turncoat. The question posed to him during the debate was, you know, why now? Why was this your make or break point when, as we heard in that clip, he had agreed to be not just a supporter of Trump, but on this Agriculture Advisory Committee, even after a lot of other comments that Trump had made were seen as inappropriate, unbefitting, unconstitutional.
Right. Just to recap, calling Mexican immigrants rapists, saying a judge could not be partial because his parents were immigrants, saying he wanted to ban Muslims. Why was this the straw that broke the camel's back?
Yeah, and we really, I think, tried to get at that with that question. Like, we were mulling it over a lot beforehand. And I don't think he really answered it as far as why this is the thing and those other things. You know, he's kind of, you know, he framed it as, I can't defend this to my children, but how can you defend some of those other things either? He really didn't want to go there. But I think regardless of his personal motivations or, you know, what's in his heart about this, it was probably a fairly politically savvy move, even though he is taking a lot of backlash on Facebook. That district was drawn to be, you know, somewhat competitive potentially for a Democrat. So he is looking
at... In fact,
he
barely won his first
time
out.
So he's looking at folks who, you know, maybe Democrats who would be voting for him who aren't able to stomach Donald Trump. So it makes a lot of sense that he would be sort of considering that. And, you know, his opponent has very little money, very little infrastructure behind him. So to me, it was a politically smart move.
I wonder, Charlie, do you think that there is, giving the benefit of the doubt to a lot of these I've heard this sort of thread of criticism. Why this, right? You after the comments about every other ethnic group under that you can imagine that Trump has made, why this? And Davis did say during that debate that, you know, he had this conversation, what, over the kitchen counter with his wife, and they sort of came to this decision. And I think he said he has some daughters. We heard that a lot. You know, I have a wife, I have a daughter, from people who were justifying this. Is it somehow more relatable because of that? I mean, obviously you don't necessarily have Mexican people in your family, or Muslims in your family.
I think that's exactly it. Not everyone is Muslim. Not everyone is of Mexican ancestry. Not everyone has friends who fit those categories. Everyone for sure has a mother. A lot of people have wives. A lot of families have female children, daughters. And so this is something that comes home to you. When someone can discuss those kinds of acts and kind of pass it off of as, oh, this is just boys being boys, I think a lot of people find that reprehensible. I mean, George Will referred to him as a venomous charlatan, and I think Will was being charitable. But that's, for many people, I think it's the straw that broke the camel's back, to use the old cliche.
Yeah, George Will, the Republican columnist who had his assistant withdraw his Republican Party membership.
Who writes as well as all the rest of us wish we could.
Amanda, this is not the only, Congressman Davis is not the only Republican who has sort of had multiple positions on Donald Trump. We heard this week that
Peter Roskam,
yes, had varying positions, and now he is, I guess, undecided was the latest. We've also heard you were with Governor Bruce Rauner. He was asked about this multiple times this week, and he is just, refusing to say, right, in terms of—
Well, not refusing. I think he would tell you he's answered the question, and you obviously heard that exchange. What really, I think, needs to be pointed out, you go back to a couple of comments he made some time back. The governor during the primary said he wasn't going to back anybody. He had multiple friends in the Republican race for the presidential nomination. He did, however, it was at the Republican State Party conference, talk about that he was going to, you know, support the Republican ticket. And I believe one other time also had said, you know, I'm going to support the party's nominee. He hasn't repeated that since spring. We haven't heard those words, nor has he taken it back. He really seems to be focusing on that he has not endorsed or supported. And what we can gather, because he really clams up, won't say anything in terms of those definitions, what he is considering in the race. It seems like endorse, we know that term, and I think that that's this thin line that a lot of Republicans are walking.
Right. Endorse calls to mind this idea where you grab their hand and raise it over your head on a stage and say, I wholeheartedly back this guy here. Yeah. You should vote for him.
You're on
a
list.
Right.
Mm-hmm. From what you can piece, is that support means dollars. And obviously, Governor Bruce Rauner has not hesitated to put money into this election cycle, but he has not given any directly to Donald Trump. So we're supposed to make something of that. I think that that's what you're getting at. Every time you press, it's clear that Governor Bruce Rauner does not want to talk about this. I guess I get the impression that he's annoyed about being asked about it. And frankly, of course, there are other issues at stake in Illinois. But this presidential race is one that is, for good reason, captured voters' hearts and minds. And Rauner has declared himself the head of the Illinois Republican Party. So it's significant that he is not weighing in here. And some factors to consider are that, when he is putting this much money into Republican races, if you have a Republican get out the vote campaign, could that help Donald Trump? So even if Rauner isn't endorsing or supporting directly, is it indirect? And who, you know, what does he really value? What does he support? Is this enough? The governor did go out of his way to say that he condemns sexual assault and harassment.
Well, I think there's an interesting mental calculus going on, in the sense that some people say, well, we're going to vote for Trump because he's the lesser of two evils. Hillary Clinton is Satan incarnate, even worse than Mike Madigan, and so we can't vote for her. And there are also people who have heard this from folks who say, well, yeah, Trump is sort of a buffoon. He's not a serious guy. He has no policy ideas. But look at Mike Pence. Mike Pence will be the vice president. He'll be the guy behind the throne. He'll be the guy who's pulling the strings, making the policy decisions, while Trump is out gallivanting around ogling women. And so we want Mike Pence to be the surrogate president. And I say to them, do you think a guy like Donald Trump, who is so in love with himself, is going to allow somebody else to actually be the commander-in-chief? But that's part of it. That's how they justify voting for him, that Hillary is bad, Mike Pence is the adult in the room, and he'll take care of that stuff. And Pence is the governor of Indiana, and it's a state that Governor Rauner looks to as kind of the ideal for what Illinois should be. So,
yeah, and I would say, Amanda, you said that the governor thinks or would probably say that he's answered this question, and he says, I've made my statement, certainly. But Jamie,
he has said that.
Right,
yes.
Yeah. But Jamie, he has been asked, will you be voting for Donald Trump? And I think he has just said, well, I've made my statements. He won't sort of re-answer that question in a fresh way or in a very clear-cut way. And to me, this goes to something that has been a pattern with the governor, which is if he doesn't want to talk about it, if it's not an issue that is a priority for him, you go back to the primary campaign even. People would try to ask him about abortion or same-sex marriage. I remember there was a moment at the Tribune editorial endorsement session in the Republican primary back in 2014 where the person just kept somebody on the Tribune editorial board kept driving at, what's in your heart? What would you really do with same-sex marriage? And he just said, I'm not going to talk about it. That's up to the voters. Not going to talk about it. Not going to talk about it. And I mean, to me, that's one of the reasons that reporters are continuing to press this, because this is part of a broader pattern with the governor.
He stays on message very well.
Yes. Right.
Probably better than any candidate we've had or any public official we've had for years.
Stays on message, which I guess another way to put that would be, you know, ignoring things that a lot of voters care about and you don't want to talk about because it could anger people,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think some of it is also just highly prioritizing his agenda, and that's what he's focused on. That's what he wants to talk about. And it's frustrating to reporters, but as Charlie said, for, you know, political operatives watching this, it's like, whoa, that guy can stay on message. I mean, I think there's probably some looking at that with admiration even maybe, but it is very frustrating for reporters because there are these topics, as you just listed, that he has kind of said in the past, well, that's not really what, you know, that's not what I'm here for. That's not what I'm about. That's not the conversation I want to have. That's not what I believe is going to help Illinois, and just kind of moves on. But I think, you know, as we get into this home stretch heading into the election, it's going to get potentially a little more uncomfortable for him as far as Donald Trump, because Trump has basically said now, I'm unshackled from the conventions of the Republican Party, however much he was already shackled by them, I'm not sure. But you know, the gloves are off and we're hearing talk about scorched earth and that sort of thing leading in. So I just think it's going to get uglier and uglier. And he may be saying more and more things that put the governor in an awkward spot of not wanting to talk about
this. Well, maybe what he ought to do is take a hint from Phil O'Connor, who was a Thompson aide, head of the Commerce Commission during the Thompson years, for part of those 14 years, who had an op-ed in the Tribune the other day and suggested people who are dissatisfied with Trump shouldn't throw their vote away and stay home. Mm-hmm. They should vote for Jill Stein, who is the Green Party candidate. And his reasoning is, if the Green Party gets enough support in the general election, they will become an organized party, and it will be easy for them to put a candidate for governor on the ticket in 2018, and because the Green Party would appeal more to progressives, liberal Democrats, than to conservative Republicans, that would siphon votes away from whomever the Democrats nominate to run against Bruce Rauner when he seeks re-election. So O'Connor's
theory is... It's an interesting
theory,
but a tough hurdle to climb, and I guess I would have a hard time imagining Donald Trump doing so. If any third-party candidate, I would think he would, despite Gary Johnson's missteps, particularly on the foreign policy front.
He's not talking about Gary Johnson. He's talking about the other side.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
But go back to, when was it, 2006, when the Green Party candidate for governor got 10% of the vote, and the Green Party then was an established political party.
And Rich Whitney campaigned very hard for that, whereas I would argue Jill Stein, she made, you know, an appearance in Chicago, but that has definitely not been a movement. So it's an interesting theory.
I'm not saying that it's going to work, but I find it kind of an interesting theory to be propounding that if you're...
That's pretty...
That's the best thing for... For Bruce Rauner.
Just purely political strategy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I think that Governor Rauner is being, maybe, I mean, if he isn't saying, maybe he is, who knows? I have no clue, obviously. It's a private vote. But if he is planning to vote for Donald Trump for whatever reason.
Republicans have good reasons, even if they think Trump is not qualified. I mean, the Supreme Court vacancy alone for locking that up for potentially 20 years, 30 years even, depending on the age of the nominee, whether it's Obama's nominee of Merrick Garland or somebody else. I mean, I think that is a reason a lot of Republicans are saying they're going to hold their nose and vote for Trump.
Right. And again, Rauner has not said that, but if that is his reason, whatever his reason is for whatever choice he does make in the ballot box. It's not just Trump. He also has said he will not say publicly where he stands on a constitutional amendment change. But Rauner, I guess you could say maybe it's preferable that he's cagey versus lying.
Yeah,
well, I would,
you know,
I
saying
would add
one thing that
thing
he thinks people
this.
Want here versus doing something else in the booth. Just
regardless
raising
of
that is a potential.
What people think of Donald Trump as an individual, the folks who are supporting him, a lot of them are folks who are expressing a message that they feel that they've been left out by changes that have happened in this nation. In a sense, it's the same feeling that motivated a lot of people who voted for Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primaries. And it seems to me,
or for Bruce Rauner in the governor's election.
Well, and it seems to me that the two major parties would do well to listen to these people, try and take into account their concerns and try and formulate policies that would help the disappearing middle class.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, that's why the New Deal was such a broad coalition of support from the 30s through, until it started breaking up in the 70s, because the Democratic Party at that time found a way to appeal to the economic interests across the political spectrum. All right. We're going to leave that topic there for now. This is State Week. Our panel is Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Jamie Dunn of Illinois Issues. I'm Brian Mackey. We did mention earlier a Republican candidate who has long ago separated himself from Donald Trump. That's Mark Kirk, the U.S. Senator. He's in what was once thought to be one of the most hotly contested senatorial campaigns against Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth. And that has recent polling suggests that's not quite as competitive as it once was. I think 14 points Duckworth was ahead in the Paul Simon poll that was published a week ago, or I should say the Simon Policy Institute poll that was published a week ago. And Amanda, this week, Mark Kirk got some more bad news, at least in the form of the endorsement race.
Well, yes, the Chicago Tribune, which probably, you know, obviously the biggest paper in the state of Illinois and reaches all of those Chicago moderate, often seen as on the fence suburban voters, you had the Tribune endorsement go to Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth instead of Senator Mark Kirk. And that is particularly telling because the editorial board, not the reporters, the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune is thought to lean more on the conservative and Republican side. Their reasoning for this. Their reasoning for this was that they believe that it is Kirk's health, that they say, quote, "While a stroke by no means disqualifies anyone from public office, we cannot tiptoe around the issue of Kirk's recovery and readiness." And the Tribune editorial goes on, her endorsement of Duckworth goes on to say that they feel as if he is not the Kirk that they had previously endorsed many times before when he was a congressman in his first run for U.S. Senate, and that, quote, "due to forces beyond his control, Kirk can no longer perform to the fullest the job of a U.S. senator." You had a response from the Kirk campaign calling this a, quote, "low blow and cheap shot that is not based on, quote, fact or reality." And in fact, you did have a doctor from the Kirk campaign previously attest to Kirk being healthy in full back to full capacity when it came to his brain and, you know, cognitive health.
Although some have pointed out that Kirk released sort of a note from a doctor, whereas Duckworth has released significant amounts of actual medical records that could be theoretically at least examined a little bit more objectively and were not just the subjective opinion of one physician. Charlie, what do you – does this surprise you, this endorsement?
Yeah, it really does, because the Tribune has been such a staunch backer of Senator Kirk. As Amanda said, from the time he first ran for Congress, they've always supported him as being a fiscal conservative, but a social moderate, someone who kind of fits their mold of what a good politician would be. And so for them to decide to abandon him based on the fact of their judgment is that this stroke has impaired his cognitive abilities, apparently. I don't know if that's accurate or not. As you say, Brian, we haven't seen the full medical dossier on Senator Kirk, but it is a surprise.
And I mean, I will say from having observed him, Jamie, I don't know if you've seen him here in Springfield. We don't see him nearly as much as we see, say, Senator Durbin. Of course, Durbin has a house here.
Well, he lives here.
Right. So, I mean, and Durbin is kind of known for doing Sunday afternoon news conferences on his front lawn. But, you know, the few times we have seen Kirk— he definitely is not as mobile as he once was, and his speech is sometimes halting, and sometimes it seems a little, the topic can dance around a little bit. I mean, what do you, yeah.
I mean, all of that are things I think you would expect from someone who's going through recovery from a stroke and the, you know, very serious health problems that he faced when that happened. You know, both candidates sat down at the Trib edit board, and I think the feedback we kind of heard from that as far as people's assessment was that maybe he didn't speak up enough, maybe he wasn't quite aggressive enough in that exchange. But
Duckworth
then,
spoke a lot.
Yeah. But then when you think about the U.S. Senate too, though, I mean, there are people who have served into maybe almost even their 90s, and there have been folks with some pretty serious health issues being like wheeled in for votes, you know. So in some ways it may be that the times are changing on the thoughts of those, but by no means is Kirk to that degree. Again, we're not doctors. We can't really assess where he stands, but there have definitely been folks who have served in the Senate with far less maybe sound health going on.
Well, I think you think of Robert Byrd, Strom Thurmond, but they were in less competitive states, too.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Amanda?
I think part of it, too, though, and what's maybe surprising about, again, the Tribune endorsement here, because it is has this, you know, it's thought of to have this conservative leaning and has definitely shown that, particularly even more so in recent years, it seems to me, at least, is that you know, part of this race is control of the U.S. Senate. So in making a decision, it's obviously very much about the individual. Who do you prefer? Tammy Duckworth, her stances, Mark Kirk, his stances on particular issues, and Kirk, you know, trying to cast himself and showing the areas where he has deviated from the party norm. And yet we've seen so much of what goes on in Washington, D.C. of late, yes, very much be party line. And with control of the U.S. Senate on the line, an interesting choice by the Chicago Tribune in an area that, you know, would seemingly give Democrats extra help in their attempt to take control.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, it's a difficult area to discuss when you look at like the Americans with Disabilities Act and the feeling that folks should be able to keep their jobs and stay in the workplace even if they are dealing with some of these challenges. And it kind of, to me, breaks down a little too, is how much of the job is politicking and how much of it is lawmaking and the things that, you know, he's doing in D.C. And if he's maybe not appearing exactly as remembered on the campaign trail, how much does that matter? And I don't know the answer to that, but that seems to be part of what's at stake here.
Yeah, and he will say his best argument for himself is that he is one of the few moderate Republicans. As the Republican Party has grown more conservative, that he's sort of a bridge. At least that's how he's positioning himself. Well, let's leave that topic there. We've got a few more weeks yet to go of that campaign. I suspect we'll hear more from that. Amanda, this week you had an opportunity to watch a movie. I don't know if we want to call it a documentary, a campaign, extended, a very long campaign advertisement, how you want to characterize this, with apologies to Charlie's former Sun-Times colleague, Roger Ebert. Thumb up, thumb down. How do you you characterize this?
I'm not sure I'm ready to go out on a limb there and give a thumb up, thumb down. Not a film critic here, but I have been characterizing it as a movie about Speaker Madigan, though the funders, the Illinois Policy Institute, have been calling it a documentary and say, you know, it wasn't intended as a hit piece. This is an interesting figure who, no matter what perspective you're coming at it from, has had a very profound influence on Illinois politics and government over the past decades. And so went to a screening. It was at the Legacy Theater in Springfield. It wasn't a packed house, but there were a lot of people there. Just judging from what I heard in the audience, it seemed as if most people there were not fans of Michael Madigan. The documentary featured individuals ranging from former Governor Rob Blagojevich's brother, Rob, to the primary opponent that Madigan had this election cycle, Jason Gonzalez. In a way, if any, that it was a campaign ad for him. Jason Gonzalez came out saying, I just want to make change. I'm not going anywhere. And then you did, however, have a couple of individuals from Madigan's district saying that, you know, we love the guy. We appreciate him. He's out here. He's a normal guy. And they described him as very loyal. He knows everybody's name. It really went into detail about patronage. I did learn a couple of facts and, you know, just kind of little tidbits. But I'm not sure it shed any brand new light on Madigan. If you don't like him, you could come out of that movie with plenty to give you fodder.
Charlie, we've only got about a minute left. You've sort of observed this. I don't think you haven't seen the movie yourself.
No, and I have no intention of either. I don't want to spend an hour of my time, particularly at my age, wasting it looking at a hit piece on Michael Madigan by a schlock outfit that passes this off as a documentary. I mean, Ron Popeil, they're
not.
Spent
a lot of money on it. Let's be
clear.
It's a new age of campaigning. I think that's the big
thing. That's exactly it, Amanda. Back in the day when I was an active reporter, people sent out mailers, people had TV ads, but there wasn't the ocean of money inundating the races, so you have to try and figure out new ways to spend it. Well, here's this guy Madigan. He's responsible for all evil in the world, so let's put out this hit piece on him and even hire actors to portray real people in it.
I think that, and we only have about 30 seconds here, but I think that one of the sort of the key takeaways here is how much the Policy Institute, Governor Bruce Rauner, and the Republican Party seem to be marching in lockstep right now, that neither can do wrong in any of the other's eyes in terms of trying to advance the governor's agenda in Illinois.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Go ahead.
In lockstep. A very well-funded lockstep. I mean, there was another story this week. So Senator Daniel Biss has a new federal super PAC that's airing $1 million thus far in ads against Rauner, trying to tie him to Trump. You have that. That's $1 million. We don't know. Illinois Policy Institute does not need to declare its spending on things such as this documentary, but it was slick production. They clearly spent a lot of money and some time on this. And obviously, we've had Governor Bruce Rauner spending his, $20 million or so is what we're up at this election cycle. So really a whole lot of money to get that lockstep message across.
That is our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Jamie Dunn of Illinois Issues. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.